So my wonderful staff are texting me rapidly on all forms. The other ones that are not continuing this year are Grant, Laurelhurst and Wallace. We have offered to work with the Brooklyn community to have them develop their own program in Brooklyn. And indeed, I would be concerned about doing this one time now. Do they then start into the Buckman Pool conversation of having to come year after year after year to get one-time funding? But another suggestion that my chief of staff has says that perhaps we could bring it to the adopted budget after we've had time to talk about it, you and I, and the parks staff.
Okay.
I'd be happy to do that moving forward, but no for right now.
Wheeler.
So the amendment has died, so I would appeal to Commissioner Saltzman to do what Commissioner Fritz and Commissioner Fish has suggested, which is flesh the proposal out and then bring it back potentially for some of the innovation funds, or perhaps there's a way, just given that it is a relatively small item and it is the only thing that you are asking for today. I'd like to see that work honored in some way, so I would ask my colleagues to see if they cannot work that out. I will vote with the majority. I will vote no, but I'd like to see your work respected and honored in this regard, so we'll continue to work with you on it. The amendment fails.
I just want to make sure that Commissioner Saltzman's previous amendments on the Vision Zero funding being able to go to that refugee training and immigrant training program, that's already
budget.
In there?
It's in the mayor's
Good.
File
That's
budget.
Correct.
Thank you.
So we have one more, and our incredible on-the-fly amendment drafters have been busy at work. What do you got for us?
So council expresses its intent to fund $967,000 in transportation services to lower-income high school students who attend the Park Rose, David Douglas, and Portland public school districts. Council further expresses its intent to hold a work session to determine the appropriate allocation of these resources, followed by action to appropriate those funds.
Second.
I just want to
Is that your amendment?
Well,
could you read it again slowly, please?
Sure. Council expresses its intent to fund $967,000 in transportation services to lower-income high school students who attend the Park Rose, David Douglas, and Portland Public School districts. Council further expresses its intent to hold a work session to determine the appropriate allocation of those resources, followed by action to appropriate those funds.
So one of my concerns is what we are basing the needs assessment on, because I don't believe that free and reduced lunch is a reasonable cutoff, because you have to be extremely low income to qualify for the services. So I want to make sure that by saying low income, we're not restricting ourselves to a specific criteria.
So I think the term lower income is generic enough that during the work session, council would be able to define that term.
That could be under 100% of MFI, right, for instance.
I agree with my colleagues' legislative intent on that. Andrew, the only other wordsmithing I want to just raise is it says we intend to fund. We are, in fact, funding this. I mean, this is a one-time general fund. I think it should be stated that we are, in fact, funding one time, the tune of 900-something thousand, yeah, and then, but we are going to determine how the money is allocated through a separate process.
Right.
I would make that one tweak, because we're not intending to fund it. We are funding it.
Good. Council is funding.
Excuse me. So that was a motion then by Fritz. It was amended by you daily. It was seconded by Fish, if I got that all correct.
And did we say who's going to do that, or does anybody want to raise their hand to volunteer to do the organizing of it? I'll work with Commissioner Daly. How's that? Thank you. Because I want to also add in there, not in the motion, but just to declare my legislative intent, there are places in East Portland that really don't have very good TriMet service. So I would assume that the school boards would be thinking about what works in their district, again, in addition to the lower income students, that if you already live so far away from a transit line, that's not a pass, it's not going to help you very much. So it could be that they're going to fund different things in transportation.
Okay. So I'll put my comments on the table again. I will absolutely support this amendment as amended, and I want to appreciate the work my colleagues have put into trying to find the right solution. But I also want to be the budget wet blanket and say, as good as this program is and as popular as this program is, and as needed as this program is, I continue to wonder why the City of Portland is funding it at all. It is not a core service, and the conversations we're having here are conversations that school boards should be having, or perhaps the state, which created the yellow bus law with the school boards, maybe they should be having this conversation, or maybe they should be supporting us in our efforts to fund this important service in the community. And there's no end to really important, valued services in the community, but this one really is the round peg in the square hole, as far as I'm concerned. I appreciate the work that Commissioner Fritz did trying to address the second glaring problem with this program, which is that it is wholly inequitable for us to be funding Portland Public School students and acting as though the other two districts, Park Rose and David Douglas, aren't Portland students. They are. But it's further complicated by the fact that they have not declined their resources from the state around yellow bus services. So part of your work session is going to have to be digging deep and understanding the implications of us trying to fund something where there's already a conflicting state law that's in place and that the legislature has put into place. And then there's the third part that I'm really interested in, which is, what is the real cost of this program? What is the true incremental cost of adding students onto already existing TriMet bus routes? Are they crowding out other customers? Are they adding additional buses? Are there busloads of people waiting to pay who are passed up because the buses are so full of students? I would like to know, how is our money actually being used in the context of this program? Is the real additional marginal cost of this program really the $3 million that is stated as the true cost of this program? I think we have a right to know that if we're funding this. But I really want to be very clear as I support this today, that as important as this program is, and we heard from the youth commissioners loudly and clearly during our budget forums, this is ask number one. It's really important to them, and I get it, and we're going to fund it this year. We're not going to leave people wondering what's going on come July 1. But I want to have some very serious conversations about this program and its continuation as a city service before we fund it again.
Thank you. Sorry, that reminds me, let's make sure we have the last sentence in the motion, that furthermore, Council directs PBOT to complete an independent objective analysis of TriMet's actual costs associated with the program, either through increased expenses or foregone revenues. Thank you.
Should I read the whole thing again? And if somebody wants to introduce it as one motion, just to make sure that we've got everything.
Once more.
Okay. Okay. So Council is funding $967,000 in transportation services to lower-income high school students who attend the Park Rose, David Douglas, and Portland Public School Districts. Council expresses its intent to hold a work session to determine the appropriate allocation of those resources, followed by an action to appropriate those funds. Furthermore, Council directs PBOT to complete an independent objective analysis of TriMet's actual costs associated with the program, either through increased expenses or foregone revenues.
All right.
Thank you. Well done.
Nice. Good job. Any further comments or conversation to be had? Please call the roll.
Fish.
I thank all my colleagues for, I think, a very productive conversation. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you for making it better. Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. Great work. The amendments adopted. Great drafting. So that does that conclude the amendments? So we have some professional staff.
So actually, at this stage, Mayor, I just want to make sure we don't miss step seven of the script. So with those amendments that the Budget Committee has put on the table, and all of them have been approved with the exception of the Saltzman Amendment around Brooklyn Park, we now need
But before we go to B, C, and D, we have a whole group of on-duty officers who've been waiting. Can they testify now and be dismissed before we go through and approve the exhibits? Is it necessary for us to approve the exhibits right now?
As Budget Committee, you can call folks up at any time.
I'd like to call those folks up.
We need to do this step before we move to public testimony.
Mayor, understood.
Okay.
Can I just make an observation?
Fish.
And I take a backseat to no one on this council in support of SCT. I just want to be very clear. The issue, the amendment that we've adopted today for consideration has to do with the color of money, has to do whether one-time or ongoing money. It in no way, in my view, is a comment by the council on the merits of the program, which we're free to revisit any time. And on some level, sort of, you know, weighing the lives saved through Vision Zero versus the lives saved through SCT, I think that's for a higher authority to make that call. So I hope that, I mean, I hope that no one from the Police Bureau believes they have to come to this budget forum and defend the program, because it would be my intent to continue to fund them as one commissioner with one-time or ongoing money as long as they're getting the outcomes that they're getting. So it's not a, it's not for me a referendum on the on their outcomes.
Great. And I think it's important to make that clarification that we are, in fact, funding the program in the budget as proposed and through the amendments that have just been put on the table. So with that, if you'd like to come up and say a few words, we'd be delighted to have you, and thank you for your patience. Good afternoon. And if you could just state your name for the record, please.
Yeah, I'm Chris Davis, Assistant Chief with the Portland Police Bureau.
I'm Emily Roshan, Service Coordination Team Program Manager with the Police Bureau.
So, Mayor and Commissioners, we've already been over a lot of the benefits of the Service Coordination Team, and so I'll keep this fairly quick.
Thank you.
Our only questions about this amendment are that our concern is that our current contract with Central City Concern runs through June 30th of 2019 for just south of $4.6 million. As noted earlier, this program is required where some successor is required in the DOJ settlement agreement. And so our concern really at this point is about funding this program after July of 18. The increase in staffing relative to vacancies within the Police Bureau, particularly by the end of fiscal 17-18, is going to put pressure on our ability to use salary savings for one-time expenses. And so that's going to put additional pressure on our budget that is less likely to be available for programs like this. We also would advocate for the use of some of this marijuana money for traffic enforcement. You know, the city's statistics are that from 2004 to 2013, 91% of fatalities involved some form of impairment on the part of
Chief,
the operator.
Chief, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we've left $500,000 of the marijuana tax money in the traffic division, so that's not taken away.
Right. Thank you. So that's really it. I have Emily here if you're interested in any specific information about the program or outcomes or anything.
Great. The results have been very good. As Commissioner Fish said at the beginning of the discussion, there were a lot of questions about whether this would be a successful partnership, and the data I've received suggests it's very successful, that it works with some of the most chronically homeless people, connecting them with important services that they need. It connects people with potential behavioral health issues with service providers rather than sending them to jail. And it gives people sustained long-term support. So I just want to underscore what you heard up there. We do get it, and it is a highly valued program, and you've done a great job. I want certain people to hear me say this. You have done a great job in the Police Bureau running this program, and your partnership with Central City has been an exemplary one. So thank you.
Here, I'll go one step further. They didn't play this card, but I'll play it for them. We understand also that if this program were to discontinue, it'll end up costing our community more money, because we'll go back to the old and not very creative solution about locking up people who have drug addictions and then releasing them after they've done their time no better off, versus actually addressing their addiction and helping them transition to becoming productive members of society. And if anyone doubts the success of this program, I would invite them to come to the graduation ceremonies with SCT folks who have turned their lives around and have begun new lives because of the counseling and the services they've received. So we thank you for your work.
Yeah, thank you, and thanks for your patience. Any further questions? Thank you for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, so to the exhibits. So I'll call for a motion to approve the budget adjustments and attachments B, C, and D of the memo as amended.
Yeah, and let me be really clear. This is not a vote to approve the budget.
No.
This is simply council as the budget committee. All of the amendments you've just discussed that there is support for, as well as the changes to the proposed budget that you filed last week, this puts them all officially on the table for public conversation.
Correct.
Testimony.
So
I'm not second. Making, you are making the motion, Commissioner Daly, Commissioner Fritz, second. So now we're ready for public testimony.
And now we need a vote now to, but yeah.
Please call the roll.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. So the budget adjustments and attachments B, C, and D of the memo is amended, is approved.
Including all the amendments we just talked about.
All of the amendments we just talked about.
Public testimony.
Correct. Very good. Thank you. Now we go to public testimony. How many people are interested in public testimony? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We need 3 minutes.
Nine people signed up.
How many?
9.
Okay. Yeah. 3 minutes is good.
Okay. First three, please, coming up are Mary Seip, Emma Calloway, and Mark Goldberg.
Ah, Mary, you get your full 3 minutes this afternoon.
Yeah.
Right. I'm glad.
I'll take a deep breath here. Hello again. My name is Mary Seip. First thing I want to say is thank you. I was ill the last couple of weeks, and so I've been watching a lot of the budget conversations on my TV. And I just want to say that I feel heard. When I see the things that are in the budget, there are a number of things that I've given public testimony on that have been put in the budget. I'll just name a couple of them. I've given testimony about the graffiti abatement funding and the issues around that, some issues around the additional park rangers, issues that we've had with crime and safety issues in our neighborhood. I've given testimony about affordable housing, and there's definitely things there for that. I do want to say that I support the funding that you've suggested with the state revenue sharing for the police bureau. I think any funding that we can allocate to our understaffed police bureau that will help with added training on dealing with mental health crisis and things of that nature is really needed, and that I totally support anything of that nature. I also want to thank you for declaring this Older Americans Month. I'm one of those older Americans, and I was thinking while I was sitting here this morning watching a number of young people participating in city government, how I didn't start participating in city government until I became a senior citizen, and made me wonder kind of what kind of impact might I have had at this point, stage in my life if I had started out as a teenager in high school. I also want to thank you for the funding for the, I can't remember what you're calling it, age-friendly city or whatever. You'll recall that a couple of weeks ago I gave some very emotional testimony about the plight of elderly people over 65 living on Social Security and struggling to survive in our community with increasing rents. And I just want to say I really support what you're doing. I'm incredibly appreciative of the process that and the opportunity that you've given to citizens like myself to give input. And, again, I feel heard, and thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and members of the commission. My name is Emma Calloway. I'm the government relations director for Portland Community College, and you asked if there are any registered lobbyists. I'm a registered lobbyist.
Thank
in the state
you.
Of Oregon.
Appreciate that information.
Absolutely. Today I'm here because in your budget you have a $400,000 request to the state for additional workforce dollars, and we're here to testify on meeting that need that you've requested for partners that you haven't worked with before, but may be able to meet some of those workforce needs that you're trying to address and also help to fill the skills gap. We hear all the time from employers through Portland Community College for additional workforce training that would help to kind of fill this advanced manufacturing skills gap or a number of other issues. And Portland Community College and Mount Hood Community College that we're here to represent today have kind of put together an idea about how to think more creatively and support that we would definitely need from the city to continue to expand the workforce work that we do for the city. I will highlight that there was a Georgetown University study recently that came out that illustrated over 11 million jobs across the country, that 11.5 million of those 11.6 million jobs really do need some sort of education past high school. And we think that there's a real opportunity to expand Portland Community College's role in not necessarily a two-year, not always a four-year degree, but what other career pathway programs can we help create that get folks moving into the workforce? So in other words, 99% of job growth we know will go to folks who need some sort of additional training, and we'd like to continue to provide that. We provide that now, and we'd like to grow that program. So I'll turn it over, but the last thing I just wanted to say is that between Mount Hood Community College and Portland Community College, we want to continue to provide innovative, strategic ways to address the skills gap and to provide creative education that get folks back into the workforce as quickly as possible. And this approach of connecting high-quality training, college certificates, and industry-recognized credentials, in addition to student-supported services, kind of help people get through to their path and help people graduate from Portland Community College with a real career path opportunity. So at this point, I'll turn it over to Mark Goldberg, the Associate VP at Portland Community College for Workforce Development, to kind of talk about our suggestion.
Thank you.
Mayor Wheeler and members of the commission, for the record, my name is Mark Goldberg, and I'm the Associate VP for Workforce Development and Continuing Ed at Portland Community College. What I wanted to do is talk a little bit about the proven results of our Career Pathways programs as they align with student success, workforce development, equity and inclusion, and also really align with regional workforce sector strategies. So Mount Hood Community College and PCC's high-quality career pathways programs that integrate career coaching and wraparound support have had an 89 to 94% college credential completion rate, and that's a range because we've got two colleges there, 75 to 85% employment rate, and 72% persistence in college after getting their first credential from our students. Career Pathways programs really do reach underserved populations and close the achievement gap through strategic outreach, community partnership with our workforce board, with WorkSource Oregon and community-based organizations, and with recruitment. And so far, our results over the last few years in Career Pathways, we've been able to serve over 50% students of color, 50% low-income students, and 40% students who are either starting in GED prep, who are either non-native English speakers and or generally underskilled adults. Our Career Pathways Initiative with PCC and Mount Hood and really the state of Oregon's Community College Pathways Program has been recognized nationally. We've been recognized through the White House Ready to Work Initiative under the Obama administration, Center for Law and Social Policy, National Skills Coalition, Workforce Strategy Center, Community College Research Center, League for Innovation, and the Community College Consortium for Immigrant Education. And so I think the best way also of telling the story is to hear a student success story, and our students weren't able, or graduates weren't able to join, but I have a quick one. LaShawn was laid off from his CNC laser position and needed to retrain. He heard about PCC's career pathways in the HVAC program at Swan Island, which I know Mayor Wheeler, you toured last year. He registered and completed the 6 months of training. Career Pathways arranged several job shadows for him with various employers. LaShawn continued his education toward his associates in facilities maintenance while increasing his professional network. He's about to start an internship with a leading HVAC company with a potential hire at the end. LaShawn said he really valued the classes and the support course offered by PCC. He also values the support of Career Pathways team and the job shadow and business connections he's been able to make because of the team. Since LaShawn has two employers who are trying to competitively hire him, he will have employment by the end of the summer term 2017. He can expect an entry wage of $16 to $22 an hour and the potential to make around $75,000 a year.
That's great.
So that's one student. I have multiple success stories and also one with an employer. And we're going to leave you a letter from Vigor Industrial, which is a really important manufacturer in our region down in Swan Island. And we're running out of time, but just wanted to have a joint ask between Mount Hood and PCC of $200,000 of the $400,000 for workforce development to support Career Pathways programs.
So that's your
ask.
That's the ask. $200,000 of the $400,000
yes.
to PCC, Mount Hood.
Together.
And what's the relationship between career pathways and Future Connect?
So, Yeah, so there's some alignment with career pathways in Future Connect. Future Connect is really focused on students coming out of high school mm-hmm. and transitioning to post-secondary career pathways. We've done some work with youth and some really successful work in partnership with our workforce board. But Career Pathways is also designed for dislocated workers, lower-skilled adults, non-native English speakers, GED prep students. So it's a broader initiative that's really focused on career and technical education.
So can I also just, since you're flagging for us an opportunity, let me just throw one back at you, which is, since you mentioned Vigor in particular, so we are leading an effort around Superfund, which mm-hmm. is going to have a substantial jobs component locally. And as we figure out, you know, who the parties are at the table, work systems, state employment, EPA, and others, it sounds to me like we need to have you at the table to help us understand how to create opportunities for the students that you're educating. And there may be some funding opportunities through that process to support workforce training. So we'll reach out to you on that.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Fish. Just to address Commissioner Fritz's question, the services that we provide for Future Connect students versus Career Pathway students have very different set of counselors, different set of wraparound services. So in terms of the budget, they are two very separate programs. And to grow Career Pathways, that is the request we have before you today.
What's the $400,000 that you're referencing?
It's a very small budget note within your budget, as I understand it, that I read, that calls out non-traditional partners for workforce development programs.
Okay, and I'll get some more information from our budget stuff.
Yes,
thank you.
I can help you find it. Thank you.
Thanks. Very good. Thank you. Next three, please.
Our Sarah Hobbs with Antigone Jarrett, and it'll be Carla Nutt.
Sarah, did you want to start?
I want you to see this for the support, because I actually support what the pastor commented on at the beginning, and I will explain why. For the record, my name is Sarah Hobbs. For the past 18 months, I've been partnering with the Behavioral Health Unit, predominantly their Enhanced Crisis Intervention Team. I fully support that the part of the recreational marijuana tax go to the BHU, and I believe SCT program. But my biggest fear is that there not be a guarantee that the money cannot be diverted to other groups like Rapid Response. This past May 1st, trying to get out of downtown, I went where we were ordered to go. I was on a sidewalk. Five Rapid Response officers, a direct violation of the rule. They are not supposed to be on the sidewalk unless they are arresting the person they are pushing. Pushed me down the sidewalk solely because they were in a hurry to get to the other end of the sidewalk. The whole time I had my hands up like this going, I'm disabled, I'm going as fast as I can. They pushed me faster and I got the control of my bladder and ended up wetting my pants, and they pushed me into a kennel. And then I had to walk 8 blocks up, down, my back in spasms and my pants soiled to catch the streetcar to come home. I fully support that the recreational money go to the BHU SCT program, but what guarantees do I have that that money will not be diverted to other police agencies? I have, as you can see, that is page 4 of the January BHU newsletter. That I am proud of, but I need to know that that money will not be diverted from the source that it's put into the budget. And what guarantees do we have of that? That's my question.
Thank you, Sarah. Appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Hi, my name is Antigonus Jarrett, and I am here to support Sarah Hobbs. I just want to clarify that our concerns are specifically the way that money is going to be used for behavioral health and whether or not it will be used specifically for behavioral health. Because many, many people self-medicate. It would make a lot of sense for behavioral health to come out of this budget, but it wouldn't make a lot of sense for the police budget to come out of this when we should be diverting those funds to help people. I very much agree with what Fish and Saltzman were saying earlier about how this behavioral health unit is basically preventative maintenance for the whole city, of making sure that, that people are healthy and happy. And I would like a good explanation of exactly what the money is going to be going to and exactly how those programs are going to be helping members of the community. And I would like it if those were made accessible easily on the council's website.
So the good news is we've had extensive council hearings over the years on SCT, and we have annual reports. So if you give us your contact information, we can get that to you. It is one of the most transparent programs we have, which is also why it's been one of the most controversial, because in the early days, people had strong views on both sides. It's a fair question to ask. And just to be clear, Sarah, because you raised it, the amendment that we've voted on that's now before is to take a portion of the marijuana money and flip out some money so that, that the marijuana money, tax money, funds Vision Zero, which is programs to save people's lives. And one-time money backfills service coordination team, which is dedicated to that one use. And you're concerned about it leaking into something else. That can't happen without council approval.
Okay.
But thank you for raising it.
That's the big concern in light of what happened to me on the first with those officers that I ordered were in very blatant disregard of an established rapid response officer policy about when they are and aren't supposed to be on sidewalks. They were not supposed to be on the sidewalk doing what they did.
Thank you.
So I also have one other concern. And that is, I don't know exactly what the scope of this behavioral health unit is. I haven't done as much research as I would have preferred before I came here. But there was a young man who had mental illness who was shot recently while running away with a box cutter in a park. I have to wonder whether or not the mental health services that he needed would have been available to him. And I wonder if the behavioral health units are making sure that they are taking into account our most vulnerable. And I know that Amanda Fritz and Chloe Udaly and Ted Wheeler, I know that you all care about this greatly because of what I heard earlier. And I want to say thank you for that, because that tells me that I know you're taking it seriously. However, I do not have confidence in the way that we deal with behavioral and mental health in this city, that it will necessarily save lives to divert more money, and I would be very happy in learning how it will help. However, I really, really have that reservation because I keep seeing more and more people die, like that young man who was shot just, I think, a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here this morning as well as this afternoon. Christina Nieves in my office actually sits on the Behavioral Health Unit Advisory Committee. So if you want to, she may be available right now, but if not, I'm sure she'd be happy to make an appointment to talk to you and, you know, hear your concerns and explain some of the work of the Bureau.
Thank you so much.
The situation she mentioned involved the transit police. What would be great if we could get communication between the different divisions of the police bureau about what is available if different units outside of the behavioral health unit come across somebody in their division who's in a mental health crisis. Who can they call at the BHU, the Enhanced Crisis Intervention Team? Because they
exactly.
are doing
I just
great
want to
work.
Make sure that I just want to make sure the behavioral health unit is being used appropriately as opposed to other police officers responding. That is pretty much what I was trying to say.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'd like to turn it over to you.
Good afternoon. Thank you for your patience.
Sure. Very inspirational testimony.
Yeah.
My name's Carla Nutt. I live in Laz Addition. I'm a fifth-generation Oregonian, and I've lived in Portland since 91 and from 92, being in Lads. I've been on the Friends of Lads Addition's Gardens Board for several years, so has my husband, and I'm here today representing the neighbors of Lads Addition and our extended community. I'd really like you to please not eliminate the $100,000 that you have we had originally dedicated to the maintenance of our four rose gardens and our one rhododendron garden that's with five parks in our neighborhood. I can't even think about how many hours our neighbors have spent in these parks, not only enjoying themselves, but also working side by side with the city in deadheading roses, adopt-a-rose programs, and weeding and mulching and many, many other countless activities. And we enjoy that. But we really can't do it on our own. I don't know how we would maintain all of the roses. There's so many. And we couldn't do them justice. They are test gardens. And I don't even know how we would begin to know, have the knowledge to maintain them. Some of the neighbors who live in our neighborhood are aging, as many of our neighbors are. And some of them I spoke with this week to ask them what they would want me to say to you. And some of our neighbors can't leave their homes very easily anymore, so the Lads Gardens are their only parks that they can visit, and so I speak here on behalf of them. I did a little bit of research. I'm sure I didn't do it justice, but I have a couple questions because I don't understand. Our neighborhood is historically designated. It's on the National Historic Register. And so I did a little research, and I looked up the Oregon Revised Statute number 358.653. That dictates that the city of Portland could not remove funding for these parks based on the language that I saw within that document. And also, if you read the section 7, page 7.21 of the application form for the National Registry of Historical Places for Lads Addition, you'll see that all five of the gardens are contributing resources. They're contributing factors toward that historical designation. So I think we also need to consider that they're contributing factors. And believe me, I've been told what I can and can't do with my house, which is fine, because that's why I chose to live there, for the historical greatness of the neighborhood. But I hope that also the city will respect the historical status of our neighborhood.
You're going to have to ask you to wrap it up pretty soon.
Oh.
Great.
Okay, I've got 29 seconds.
No, it's actually counting. You're up
over.
Now.
Oh, I'm over?
Yeah, it's all right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, if you have a couple more points,
oh,
go
gosh,
ahead and make
I'm
them.
So sorry.
No worries.
Well, I'll skip part of it. But I just have a question. Do the gardens revert back to the Ladd estate if they are not cared for, to the terms set in the transfer of the gardens to the city of Portland? That's one of my questions. I have some other questions. I'll email them to you. So.
Okay, that's good, and we'll respond to those.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony. Next three, please.
Our star staffer, Ramon De Luna Luvano, and Jennifer Fung. And those are the last three who signed up.
Very good. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Council. Star Stauffer, for those who don't know me, but I find that hard to believe at this point. I want to parrot some of the things that Sarah and Antigonus brought up in regards to the team of police that deals with mental health crisis. And the reason that I'm concerned is because most of the police shootings in the past 10 years here in the city of Portland have involved people who were in a mental health crisis. So in that regards, the program seems almost like lip service in a lot of ways. I understand that it's reduce the recidivism rate for people who are repeat offenders or are struggling chronically with these types of ailments. However, what I find interesting is that that glowing report in that regard did not take into account how many people the police have shot here in Portland over the last 10 years that were actually in a mental health crisis. And I think if we're going to really talk about that, we need to also talk about the ways in which the Portland police have actually damaged the community and contributed to their mental health crises, and how they are not necessarily and most often seriously dangerous to people who are in a mental health crisis. They've proven time and again that they cannot handle that type of situation. So perhaps some of the money can go to training these police outside of that particular team on how to better handle those types of individuals so that they're not pulling the trigger as often as they are. The other concern that I have is in regards to the student bus passes. I understand it's not considered necessarily a core service. I just find it interesting that we're having this conversation about TriMet, considering that, I mean, and I know you guys are tired of hearing it, but it is relevant to this particular issue, giving, you know, free rides to known hate groups and white supremacists, you know, who have harassed a march of where people of color were marching, and then having a discussion about whether or not we should be providing bus passes for youth to get to and from school and summer programs. Also, again, it seems a little disgusting and distasteful. This is an investment in our children's education. It's an investment in our children's safety. It's an investment in our children being able to participate in year-round activities outside of the home and to be able to be transported around our city and be involved in things outside of their own neighborhood. To me, it just seems like this, it's in the city's best interest to be investing in the youth in that regard. I don't think it's asking that much. I did like the comment where Saltzman said that it seems that all it takes to get funding is that people have to show up to city council. And he was quite flippant about it. That's not true. We've been coming here, you know, week after week after week since December, begging and pleading to be brought to the table to get funds allocated to really seriously help and sustain programs for our houseless neighbors. And that hasn't been the case, and it hasn't been well received. So, and we're also begging and pleading for funds to be allocated to families who have lost loved ones due to police violence. And that hasn't been well received or even talked about. So I think that that comment was quite flippant and distasteful, just because you're not getting the money you want for your affluent park. And in that regard, I'd like you to take some time, maybe have a work session to go over. I know you're going to do that with the bus passes, but really talk about these things, because that's not the case, Mr. Saltzman, as you have seen time and again. And I take exception
to
that.
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap it up. Thank you.
I don't care.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. My name is Ramon de Luna Luevano. I'm a ninth grader at Madison High School, and I've been a part of OPAL's Youth Leadership Group, Youth Environmental Justice Alliance, for over a year and a half now. Youth Pass is an issue that I'm really passionate about because my siblings and I attend different high schools, and we've had different experiences with youth access to transit. I grew up watching my older brother struggle to get to school, and accessing important needs because we didn't have Youth Pass. He was a student at David Douglas, and during the time, he struggled paying for bus tickets every day. And as a student who currently goes to Madison, I know that it's a relief not having to worry about how to find the money when I need to go somewhere. I don't have to deal with the fear of being stranded somewhere without money to take the bus. For many families of color and students, I can't stress enough how important Youth Pass is to us. At the Youth Environmental Justice Alliance, students like me have been putting lots of efforts onto this campaign. We designed surveys to understand the conditions in East Portland schools and worked with the school administration to collect over 2,500 surveys. We met with Principal Beyer at David Douglas to go over our key fundings, testified at the school boards of David Douglas and Park Rose, and informed many adults on what equity should look like. In meetings with the Multnomah Youth Commission, we would sit together to look at data regarding PPS in East Portland school districts and talk about proposals and options for Youth Pass. I'm saying this because it's important to recognize the work and leadership of young people on this issue. Our continued ask of the city, besides sustaining and expanding Youth Pass to East Portland, is that we want adults to make space for youth in the process of these decisions. With the new amendment, youth can be valued in weighing in and sharing what we know to make sure that it's equitable and well-planned. We support using the funds to support the three different school districts, but what we want to see is a plan to have city representatives, youth leaders, and school districts to talk through what the rollout plan and arrangement looks like. I know we can make that happen because we have been in communication with some of these people already. I personally appreciate that the city council is talking about an equity approach. I know that students at Yasia and NYC are glad that our elected officials are listening to our feedback. We hope that you can all continue to support Youth Pass and commit to the follow-up work that is needed. This will be a huge step towards the right direction. We are ready and engaged. Thank you.
Thank you. Excellent testimony. Commissioner Fritz.
I expect I speak for Commissioner Daly. We hope you'll be part of the work session to figure it out. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Jennifer. I am the organizer at OPAL Environmental Justice Oregon. I have a lot of what the young people would say feels right now, because I think we've been talking about expansion of Youth Pass for many years. Actually, the community has been talking about it. I've joined this work the last 2 years, and it's exciting to see that the city council is taking action to make it equitable. We are really excited to be part of the work group, working closely with Commissioner Udaly's office on convening those who are most affected and also the stakeholders in that. I think that in regards to the role of the city and where the state and the school districts land in this arrangement, I would say it's not that easy to advocate at the state level. I think that if it's that hard to figure out the different conditions between PPS and the East Portland school districts, it's even harder statewide to look at the different conditions between rural and urban cities. And that's the issue that I've been learning about personally through our advocacy at OPAL, because since 2015, we've actually been advocating at the state level for a youth transit bill. It didn't pass. It created a work group. And this year, we're trying again at another youth transit bill. And I think that we recognize that there is a role for the state to play to make sure that there are sustained funds, helping school districts to increase their capacity to fund this. But all in all, I think that we want collaboration with the city to make sure that, you know, all these other government levels are involved. So thank you so much.
Yeah, happy to do that. Thank you. Appreciate that. Was there any other public testimony?
Others who didn't get to sign up requested to speak if you wanted to take them.
How many do you have?
I know of one.
Just one? Come on.
Okay. Thank you.
And this will be the last one. Last gentleman. Come on up, sir.
I feel so out of place. I thank you guys for listening to me. I've tried to call your office, Mr. Wheeler, a couple times, because over the last 6 years, I came from the East Coast in Virginia.
I'm sorry. Could you state your name for the
record? My name is John.
Thanks, John.
Right, from Virginia. If a policeman ever sees me doing something crazy on the street, comes to ask me what my name is, I'm John. What's your name, brother? And the automatic response I get is his first name. How you doing? And goes on. Could I have mental health issues? Yeah. Could it be caused because what most mental health issues are is probably people involved in substance. And if you can't rule out a substance abuse and mental health issues, there's a problem. There's a problem around here with substance abuse. Okay. The homeless problem, part of the problem is you guys put it in the media that there's a homeless problem, because there are people that really care. They're out on the streets muddying any kind of success that anybody could have, because they're catering to folks that are learning that they don't have to fend for themselves in Portland. I've got a nice work truck. I left my tools in Chicago. I wanted to talk today because I have to go back there next week. What I wanted to propose is, I heard you guys talking about a work session, and I have a whole lot of ideas. I don't know if you've ever seen footage of a guy with a trombone being the fool in your town, but I've seen police on a lot of occasions seeing what I'm doing and videotaping me, and I'm like, if you're going to take me, single cell, please, because I can't. Oh my gosh, this is legal. Guys, this is legal to have fun. Like, why aren't you guys having fun? I was a leprechaun. Three wishes: get where you're going safely, have more fun in your lives, and get back home to the people that you care about so you can think about what's really important. And when I hear about training, paid training to get a paid job, I hear entitlement in my head, to where this caste system that could possibly start up with generational birth defects just because people don't care about dimes. So, hey, I look like somebody that needs dimes. I'll go grab one. I hope you don't give me a literary ticket and make sure the people that saw me pick it up throw it down too. Y'all don't need your dimes. I don't either. You know what? They don't matter, do they? No. Now somebody gets to think about that. So what I do is really abrasive. I've put myself through this training in my life that when I look back, like, oh my gosh, I've trained myself to do something big if I can get in with the right people. It was the police and a group that deals with the mental health, or they call themselves the Angels, a few years back, would always come down to where we were playing guitar on the weekend, 3rd and Silverado, where the gay guys are, because they have money and they don't mind giving it to guys and standing out there playing a trombone in their boxer shorts, because it's something different. That's something that I like about Portland. And that's the reason that I'm here instead of like Denver, where they asked me to, why don't you come with our homeless rights group and speak to the city? Because I don't know what y'all have done over the last few years, but the city is not trying to hear. But here in Portland and the climate and the deal, there are public lands everywhere. There are so many really good, I'm not associated with the Rainbow family. I don't like them. The responsibility that they take is a publicity thing. They're not thinking about their cause correctly, and they have all their different reasons for doing it, and that's great. But I want to be able to present an idea to you guys when I get back from a job that I have in Chicago. I came out here to work, but I'm going to stay on vacation. But I need to work, so I'm going to Chicago, and the money that I make and the truck that I have, I'm willing to donate to a not-for-profit, be on the board if Portland would be interested in thinking or hearing about the thing in the world. So I'm willing to give, like, everything I have.
We appreciate that. Thank you. Safe travels.
Well, I'm also asking, the question is there any way that I could set up some type of, with the information that I've given you and the fact that I know that I can go in the woods and show 15 people that I know well on the streets, trust and respect, family to me now because they've taken care of me, how to live properly using humanure setups and composting toilet stuff that you guys could be doing instead of the porta potties down there, where the policeman that asked me to come over here was like, what's going on here? I was like, I know you guys don't know, but I wanted to talk to you.
We'd be happy to talk to you. So if you could reach out to my staff and give some contact information.
Okay. And it's going to be in about a month or so.
Yeah,
I'm going
to
be back.
I
don't have a whole lot of time in my life to not, I'm not dying, I don't think, or anything, but I wanted to go ahead and organize a chance to be able to talk to you guys seriously about these ideas where I had more than 3 minutes somehow.
I appreciate it. And I like your two ideas about have fun and get home at the end of the day.
And the idea of funding to get everything that people need to stay out of your city.
Thank you. All right.
When you hear
Andrew, you want to come back up? So it's my understanding that at this point we vote to approve the budget as amended. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So I just call the roll?
Could I just ask for one clarification in response to Mary Sipes' testimony? Mayor or Commissioner Fish, could you tell me what is happening about the age-friendly cities funding and experience PDX, et cetera?
So my understanding, Commissioner Fritz, is that there were two different proposals that were pitched. The mayor has chosen to fund one, which is loosely fits within the family of age-friendly. There is a second ask that has to do with a position at PSU and a set of programs. What I have concluded is that we need to do some additional work to lay the foundation for an ask. The mayor has some questions about the program and its effectiveness. And it seems to me appropriate to have that conversation before we come forward with an ask. And I have reserved the right to come forward with an ordinance to fund a position. But I would like—I don't think it's cooked yet, and I would like to respect the process and have a stronger foundation for an ask.
Okay, that's fine. I'm very supportive of the program, as you know, so I'm just glad to know it's still in progress.
Very good. Were there any further
questions? Just one comment, because, Andrew, we technically have one more vote in June, correct?
That is right. Yeah, today you are approving the budget as the budget committee, and you come back as city council in June to adopt the budget.
So we're approving the budget, then we're going to adopt the budget, and most of you in the audience are already exhausted from this process, which has been going on for months and months and months. By tradition, we, in approving the budget today, each of us takes an opportunity to thank some folks and to make a few comments. There's another opportunity in June, but this is usually where we do that, so just want to make that note.
Okay, very good. Is there any further comment before we get to the roll call? Please call the roll.
So, Mayor and colleagues, I'm very pleased to support this budget. And, Mayor, I want to compliment you for what I believe has been an unusually collaborative and collegial process, and you set the tone early. The budget before us addresses many of the issues that I care about personally and includes targeted and strategic funding for our shared priorities. In particular, I want to highlight that it directs a $50 million down payment on Build Portland, a bold initiative that the mayor has proposed to tackle our backlog of street maintenance and repair. Invest significant new funds in Vision Zero, affirming our belief that one death on our streets is too many. Continues our commitment to partnering with the county to fight homelessness in our community, and affirms our plan to streamline the delivery of services to people most in need. And I want to acknowledge the mayor's early work to build a strong partnership with County Chair Deborah Cafori. That relationship is crucial to our success going forward. It continues investments in highly successful programs that support our neighborhood small businesses. It supports the Rose Festival, Portland's official and award-winning festival. It continues to show discipline with ratepayer dollars, focusing on basic services like resilience and water quality. And the budget continues general fund support for improvements at Mount Tabor, work we're doing in partnership with the Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association. We have partially restored funding for the arts, and we have funded the first ever performance audit of the Regional Arts and Culture Council. And the mayor and I will be officially requesting that audit this week. The budget also funds new ranger positions in East Portland to work upstream with the community to solve problems. This is a program near and dear to Commissioner Fritz and my heart. Finally, this budget launches a program I'm very excited about called Project Search, which brings the city together with nonprofits to provide work opportunities for people with intellectual disabilities. The utilities will be piloting this program starting this summer, and I hope it proves successful and that we're able to expand it throughout the city. Mayor, again, I want to thank you for leading what has been, I think, a very productive process. This is your first year as mayor. I would say your first 100 days were eventful. And on top of all the other challenges you faced, you have led us through a budget process, which I think has led us to a budget that I hope earns the support of all your colleagues. And if it does, that will be a milestone. I also want to acknowledge your staff, Mayor, including your Chief of Staff, Maurice, and your Deputy Chief, Kristen, in particular, for the role that they have played in consulting with your colleagues on the second floor. I want to especially thank my council colleagues. We had a 40% turnover of the council this year. We have two new members who, in my view, have changed the chemistry of this council in very important ways. And I like where we're headed, and I appreciate their voices and perspectives. I want to thank Andrew Scott and the budget office, and as Sonia put in here, and his incomparable team, Sonia's adjective. And we're lucky to have an independent budget office that has the skilled professionals who work there, and we frankly could not do our work without their assistance. I also want to thank my team for their hard work, and led by Sonia Schmansky, my chief of staff. That wasn't intended to be a laugh line, but
will you thank my team too?
Okay. I want to thank my team, and led by my incomparable chief of staff, Sonia Schmansky. By the way, this is the first day in council for the newest member of my team, Amira Streeter, who we stole from the Urban League. She is a graduate of Lewis and Clark Law School, and colleagues, she will be helping to lead our work in Superfund. Amira, would you stand just so we can recognize you on your first day here? We are very excited to have her leadership on our team. And lastly, I want to thank everyone who attended a forum, sent an email or a letter, came in for a meeting, and made their voices heard. Thank you to all of you. Your advocacy has led to a better budget for the community we love. Aye.
Thank you. Saltzman?
Aye.
Udaly?
My apologies, Commissioner Fish. I am overdue to depart and feeling a little anxious. I would like to thank everyone that Commissioner Fish just thanked, as well as my team. This has been a fascinating and informative process. I feel like I've gotten to know my colleagues better, and I'm really happy with where we arrived with the budget. Aye.
Fritz.
Well, Mayor Wheeler, this is definitely a budget to be proud of for your first year as mayor, and I appreciate both your responsiveness to all of our concerns and the way that you've helped us all work together. And each of my colleagues comes under that category. All of our bureau staff, and particularly our budget advisory committees, do enormous amounts of work over what seems like 6 to 9 months, and we've got a very short break with all those work sessions before we get back to the next year's budget. But it's important because each year we make very specific funding decisions, and our bureau budget advisory committees are essential to that. So I particularly want to thank Mike Abate and the park staff, and Lisa St. Helen and the Emergency Communications User Board, and I'll